Welcome to the Safety Pro Roundtable. Every week on this show, you will hear from safety professionals around the industry as we talk about challenges, innovations, and stories that will help you lead a better safety program. This is the Safety Pro Roundtable.
Welcome back to the Safety Storytellers Podcast. My name is Stacy, and I am your host. Today, I'm talking to Scott DeBow, and Scott is full of knowledge, very energetic, and he's, you know, there's a lot that he has to offer. And the thing that he was talking about that really struck me was risk perception and risk tolerance. And it's really interesting. He's got a lot of really cool stories. So you're going to really like this episode.
Welcome back to the Safety Storytellers Podcast. I am here with Scott DeBow.
Hello.
Not Debo.
Just DeBow.
Goes by.
That's right. Football team. Son's football team is Debo.
Obviously.
Debo, you right. He is. That's it.
How old's your son?
17.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're with Avetta.
Correct.
I would love to know how you got into safety.
Sure. So it's kind of an interesting story because it's not something I recall riding around on my big wheel or green machine when I was a kid, imagining being a safety professional one day.
But no one thinks that.
They might. I mean, my hope is that one day children will, because I think they should. Because the safety community is really a wonderful community, as I've learned. So sitting here now looking back, I can think of, you know, that part of my journey was just understanding that my experience in the military that, you know, eventually gave me a wonderful platform. So I specialized in physical therapy, which gave me a great
in the military.
Okay. So it gave me a great foundation platform just to understand biomechanics and how the body works and how forces apply to the body. And so when I got out of the military, wanted to go back to school, it was a natural fit to find a company to work for. Concentra Medical was my first big business, big corporate company I worked for out of the military. And that was just a great fit to understand, look, there's injuries at work really affect, you know, not just the people, but the business impact. I understood that from a military standpoint. You call it readiness, right? An avoidable injury in the military, it impacts readiness. Well, in the business world, there's so many competing factors from cost. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have a mom and dad that are hurt and may not be going home. And so for me getting into safety, it was like a slow burn, you could say. It was like a series of aha moments over now two decades where I realized, okay, I'm in the safety profession, and then ultimately got to the point where I'm not just in the safety profession. This is my profession. This is what I want my career to be. This is the thing that compelled me to go back to school so I could actually sit for the boards for a certified safety professional.
Nice.
These are the things that motivate me to go back to school and learn, and which usually isn't my first thought, right? So normally I'll go do work or study on my own, but
yeah.
But it's just really a wonderful industry, wonderful career, and I don't want to do anything else.
What were the things that kept that slow burn going? Were there instances or something that happened to you or anybody that you know? Like, what was that thing that kept you leaning into it?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, you're always challenged in a good way. So doing your first presentation in front of an environment where people just don't want to be there. How do you make it compelling? That's a challenge, right? So the thing is, safety should never be boring. And I'll confess, I may have been a person that made it boring a time or two, but at some point I realized, okay, compliance information is what it is,
right?
But how do we really make it connect on a human level? And that's the challenge.
Exactly.
And so, you know, then it became more of a challenge of, let me get through this hour-long presentation on bloodborne pathogens or fall protection or forklift safety or whatever it may be.
You're exactly right. The information is always going to be the information.
Mm-hmm.
How can we make it more human?
Right.
Love that.
Yeah, break it down onto a human level, make it interactive. And so initially it's like, all right, this is, I'm getting it. I like it. I can feel, you can always see when you miss it. It's like, I wish I'd done or said that differently, or maybe not said that. Right. But you know, for a couple of years you get, okay, I'm growing. It's a bigger audience. I'm being invited in or I'm being invited up. But I think the thing that stuck out, Stacy, the most was, so after we had our first kiddo, right, after we had Wesley, who's now 285 pounds, Debo, right, the football player, right? I'm 5'7 and 3/4, right? So he's like about 6 feet, 285.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. I don't know where it came from.
What is this about?
I don't know how that happens. It just happens. So.
Oh, my God. So 285 is a real number?
Yeah. Yeah, that's his.
So he's Debo.
That's his weight.
I'm Sam.
He is Debo, right? But when he was a baby, I was like, I don't know why this happened, but my wife was on the phone in the kitchen. Wes was there. She got a call. I think it was a family member, but I could just tell on the phone. He's like, hey, something happened to somebody.
Right.
And Wes was kind of leaning into that. He didn't understand that, and so to me, I made the connection where, you know. This happens. Unfortunately, these types of calls happen all the time where the mom or dad or the grandmother or somebody picks up the phone and what the child hears is, well, what do you mean? What do you mean he's hurt? Right? Which hospital is he in? You know, what do you mean she's not coming home? That happens. And so it hit me. It's kind of a punch in the chest, right? Where what I'm about has to be effective. I'm not, and like, you know, so many other safety professionals that have pulled me, I'm really held onto their belt loops as they pulled me forward, have helped me understand this. And what we're about as a community is to help the community at large get better at taking care of the workforce, right? And it's an amazing industry and profession to be in. It's critically important that we learn to do it better. And so, you know, I think life is a series of aha moments, but those were some of the ones that stood out to me the most.
You know, like you said, getting better. There's a lot of people in this room, in this conference center, that are working really hard to try to make it better for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And you said that there are the same amount of incidents or fatalities. What were you saying? Just a
little bit. Oh, yeah. Sure.
It's not getting better. Or is it getting better?
Well, I'd say it's getting better in some areas. And because we've been getting better in some areas, I think we haven't been tuning into the things we should be looking at the most. We've been making assumptions for decades when we look at the, you know, Bureau of Labor Statistics, OSHA recordable rates. You know, as much as OSHA has, as important as OSHA is and the work that they've done through the 70s, through the 80s, through the 90s, you can track the recordable incident rate coming down. And that's good. During those early years, we often made the assumption that if we, and not just in safety, but in insurance, in the claims industry, that the common saying was, look, you reduce the things that happen the most, you'll also reduce the things that happen that are the worst, right?
Okay.
And it was an assumption, right? Okay. We assumed there was a correlation. We drive down frequency, we drive down severity. And what we've learned, I mean, over the past 10 years, we've really kind of been stuck at about, you know, 4,800 fatalities a year. So 47 or 4,800, that's, I think, 14 a day. Doug Parker mentioned this during his speech yesterday. That's just far too many. 14 families that get that call or go sit by a family member's bedside or don't get to sit by a family member's bedside, right? In the worst cases. And when we look at what were the situation, what was going on previous to this event that led to this terrible outcome, by and large, we know what to do to prevent this from happening. it's the business systems that come apart, right? If there's so many interdependent variables, right? Okay. So, you know, in terms of labor strategies and companies we depend on to help us accomplish our work, you know, change management. There's so many things. So what we need to understand is safety is an outcome. We all want the same thing. And I've been in safety now about 20 years. I can't remember having a conversation with anybody that says, you know, safety is number three. I think they're out there. No one's been brave enough to say, well, actually, in my book, it isn't. No one said that. Everybody agrees with the premise, the moral imperative.
Right.
Everybody should go home today, right? The way we take care of the workforce, we should know specifically the things that can hurt or kill people today. We don't make exceptions for, right? We should know what those are. And we should understand the situations we place our employees in to where they have to make a choice. They have to choose. So we have the moral imperative down, but we're often disconnected from what the workforce really faces day to day to solve the problems that they need to solve. Limited resources, not having clear boundaries on what should they do if the key doesn't fit this piece of equipment, but it fits this piece of equipment. I'm not trained on this equipment, but I'm just trying to solve problems for my boss, for the employer. I want to do good work. People will make decisions based on what makes sense to them in that moment. Therefore, for us to get beyond and make an impact at, you know, reducing this 4,700, you know, that's almost 5,000 fatalities a year. For us to make headway, we have to get into the business systems and enable the workforce to start making those discussions happen around, look, I know that's a trade-off. We might get the work done on time here, but we will be risking your life. And your children will grow up without a mom. If we make this decision, potentially, what are we really doing? And so it has to get down to that level. And that's what I'm, you know, it's part of my personal mission to see that through the rest of my career and hopefully leave a better step for the next generation.
So is the passion at that safety pro level of consulting them or teaching? Like, what is that specific passion for you?
Oh, yeah. I think it's conversational. You know, how do we, you know, there's, you know, we don't have to look very far to see division in our world or even in the workforce. A lot of it, I think, could be described in terms of unity, right? So.
And conversation is a big deal. I mean, I can't imagine being a safety pro and feeling this really huge responsibility to keep people safe and keep production up and make money, because you feel like your job is on the line in both ways. And some people, I can imagine feeling that pressure because there's not communication. I don't think, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's a tough one to feel like to navigate through.
It is. And it happens all the time. And it's an okay thing to happen, to have competing, to anticipate that we're going to have competing interests at some point.
Okay.
The question is, what do we do when those moments come? How do we create mechanisms for the employees to know what to do? To, you know, if they're a remote worker, how do they raise their hand and say, you know, the alarm's going off in this pump house. and I'm not going in there, or I can just go try, right? So we have to enable the workforce, and that requires better understanding what do we need to do. Part of my mission is helping corporate leaders understand how to communicate to their workforce, set priorities, set strategic priorities. That includes IT, investment in remote worker technology to keep us connected. I think of communications at the speed of risk is the way I like to think about it, because, I mean, think about when do we often find out where we fail, right? After an injury happens, communications are happening.
Right.
In fact, there's incident reports and there's, you know, all of these required things. But we always ask, what do we wish we knew yesterday? What did we miss yesterday? And that's what we need. And that's where, like, my mission is connected to most strongly. And I think it's connected to leadership, safety leaders. So what I like seeing at this, you know, this event is, you know, I've met people that aren't necessarily trained in a safety school or certification. And that's wonderful. That's okay. Right.
Yes.
Because what's required to be, intentional on the behalf of someone else and to initiate, a safety discussion or an intervention on the behalf of someone else, that's leadership. And it doesn't require a safety technician to come in and do a thing with a clipboard.
Right.
It requires us to understand that, hey, this is driven from our core values as people, as an organization. It's the expectation. Do we know our resources and boundaries? I've been in environments where I was supposed to have a vest on, right? And I didn't know. We missed it somewhere entering the building.
Okay.
I was new. It was my first time there, but still, maybe I should ask better questions. Maybe the entry process could have been a little more complete. But what tells me that people get it in organizations, employees, doesn't matter who they are. Hey, boss, where's your vest?
Right.
Right. It's like, man, I don't know. I'm going to go get a vest. Thank you.
Right.
So when people have the freedom to raise their hand to speak up about things that they know at least should represent normal work.
Yes.
But most especially things that can, things that'll, we call it SIF risk, right? Serious injury and fatality risk. Things that we know can lead to fatality, life-changing injuries.
Why do you think people have such a hard time raising that hand? And is it because the risk is so big that there's like a fear?
Yeah.
I feel like that if I put that in my perspective, it's like the reason I wouldn't do something is because the risk of it is so big on the other side that I just don't know.
Yeah. And I don't know about the risk. You made a great point. So you mentioned fear. And so when we think of like in the US workforce, a significant portion of U.S. employers' workforce is extended through contractors, through contingent labor, through temporary work. So they depend on a chain, a network of other companies to help them accomplish their work, the reason they're in business. And
right. And
this model's been growing. It's more. But when we think of, temporary workers, for example, and there's been studies on this. I've written a book recently. It should be out next year on this. That answers.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It kind of goes, it is my first, right? And you'll probably tell. You say, yeah, this is Scotty's first book. That's okay. I'm open to feedback, right? I didn't use crayon time. But anyway, back to your point about the fear is like, look, in a community, or it could be temporary or it could be traditionally employed. Fear is a big factor, and leaders recognize this. Corporate leaders, right? The bosses help their frontline supervisors, leaders understand people are afraid to raise their hand. How do you enable them to raise their hand? Because when fear is a thing, what happens with their, we call it risk tolerance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a situation where I may want to impress my boss, I'm a temporary worker, I'm a contractor, I may want to impress my boss, I'm willing to do more than I should in order to keep working.
Yes.
Right?
I'm
so I don't.
Risk tolerant.
Yeah. So
I have a pain threshold.
Do you?
it'll be great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then I would be one of those people.
Yeah.
I can see myself doing that.
Yeah. And so plus, I mean, equipment's cool, right?
Who doesn't, absolutely.
If there's a key in it, I'm just going to try to be helpful.
Try.
Right.
But it's going to be fine.
But that really happens. That
I
really
know.
Happens. And so people,
I'm that person that'll stand on that dumb chair that I know I shouldn't stand on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a tiny version of what they do in those big places. It's the same thought process.
That's right.
I know that rickety chair that's definitely going to break.
Stacey,
I'm going to stand on it.
This should be podcast two then about your tendencies to put yourself in unnecessary levels of risk.
Absolutely.
But look, it's human nature.
I do that. I know.
Watch me back out of the driveway.
Christmas time. I guarantee you there's something going on at your house at the Heights.
With ladders. Yeah, things I can't reach.
Yes.
Things I can't lift anymore. Right.
Yes.
So, yep. Absolutely. But
really crappy form at the gym.
That's true.
All the same.
But for workers, when they jump on a forklift, the idea is like, now you have other people that they're thinking, I can do this and not hurt myself. It's the pedestrians because they're right. So they're lacking training.
Okay.
But the other thing is, so you have the risk tolerance. upward communications is a significant thing. So you don't, it's more than just being able to raise my hand and say, you know, I'm not trained to go operate that saw, mm-hmm. or I'm not trained to climb on the roof and with fall protection.
Yeah.
This is outside the scope and boundaries of what I was trained to do. They may be willing to do that,
sure.
right? They have to have a mechanism to do that. And the supervisors that lead them have to be connected to that mechanism.
Yes.
Because look, what supervisors are doing, supervisors aren't bad people. They're trying to manage work under incredibly stressful conditions
yes.
with fluctuating resources. And so when they may grab one employee and say, hey, can you climb up on the roof, just strap this around your waist and go get it done, they're trying to solve problems.
Yes.
But they have to be trained, and expectations have to be set for the frontline workforce. How do you manage change within your workforce, your resources and boundaries? And so it's really a system of connecting those things together. So there's risk tolerance.
Yes.
All right. Different levels of risk tolerance. There's upward communications that has to be enabled. You have to have a mechanism for it.
So
and then, yeah.
I mean, I have met people, I'll say men because they were all men, but like that work front line. And it's crazy listening to them talk. They're just like, they just want to get stuff done. It's either ego, they don't, or they've done it a million times mm-hmm. like that. And they're like, one more time won't be a big deal. I mean, there's just this like culture around people sometimes.
It is.
You know, and it's like, why don't they just raise their hand and say, I don't know how to do this. This doesn't feel yeah. safe to me.
Well, that's kind of gets to the third factor around fear and
yeah.
and risk is that it's perception. So risk perception. Often the employee, if they do not understand how they can get hurt doing this function,
exactly.
their perception's off. And so studies have been done where I'm a temporary worker, I'm a contractor worker, you're
yeah.
a traditionally employed worker,
okay.
doing the same things,
yes.
my perception of how I can get hurt doing this job is diminished. It's lower than yours for different socioeconomic
yes.
reasons, psychosocial reasons.
I'm thinking about putting my triplets in a line and giving them the same scenario. Alex would be like, absolutely not. That is not safe. He's 8. He would say that because he's very.
All right.
Reed, oh my God. I know. Like he would hurt himself so bad.
Because I mean, that's terrible. I'm sorry to laugh.
No,
but yeah.
I mean, I give them all pocket knives. He's the only one I don't give a pocket knife. Like,
okay.
I'm like, here, this is. You should learn how to use this.
Yeah.
I had one too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give him one because he can't handle it. His risk perception does not exist.
Sure.
But this. But Alex, he would be like, this is very unsafe. I'm going to be very careful with this, you know? It's just perception
mm-hmm.
of like, this is unsafe, or I couldn't be hurt doing this.
Yeah.
It's here.
That's right. And so fast forward 25 years,
exactly.
when they're in the workforce
exactly.
with an employer who's behind in their order, they have 3 broken pieces of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have these 2 wonderful young people yep. that need to make a decision.
Yes.
With the best way they know how in that moment. And that's when we see things come apart. And it's back to how do we teach leaders in the safety environment to manage
to
humans,
both
right?
Those people.
Manage both of those people to a consistent standard while giving them the freedom and trust to understand that they're doing the work and are often their closest to the risk and best informed to tell us how work is really done.
Yes.
Which should tell us if we're on the corporate end or the safety end that is responsible for enabling resources. It's like, hey, that PPE isn't effective, or it's effective for, you know, 3 days and then it wears out.
Right.
Employees, help us understand what's better. Come be on the group and the procurement team that tells what should we be ordering. Because that's how it happens. Someone in procurement wants to make a good decision
yeah.
in their world. Let's save money. Use this glove instead of this glove. And in their world, that's a win.
They're like, I'm killing it right now.
Yes.
And
boss, did you just see that?
They have no idea what's actually going on.
I know. But downstream, hands on the tools, boots
right.
on the floor,
yeah.
bodies closest to the risk, that is the richest source of intel
yes.
ever. right? Yes. And so, and it's kind of a magic when we enable these things to happen. That's where we enable cultural health to grow. We get connected to the safety climate, the safety culture,
right.
And we start listening to people that understand how work is done.
That's how all of this started. This is how all of this happened, is because there was a mistake made. Somebody didn't, the PV wasn't working. Somebody made something else. That's how all of these people in this room got better, is because I'm hoping that they listen to the people that actually matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like the two down, it's just like, we had to make this glass PPE because the glass PPE that they were, it wasn't working.
Mm.
It just wasn't working. So it's like, God, listen, this is how we get better. But it's not listening to anybody else but the front line.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I think we solved all the world's problems.
We're on our way. But here's the thing. It takes all of us.
Right.
That's the thing. It definitely takes all of us.
You have to listen to them, but then the other folks are the doers.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do. They have the information, but what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, that's great that you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do people find you? People are going to... Okay, first of all, two questions.
Yes.
Can they find you, and where can they find your book?
Oh. All right.
This is amazing.
So proud
of you. That's incredible.
Well, thank you. It was, they can find, I guess, LinkedIn. I just started with my company, so I don't have business cards, business cards yet, but scott.debeau@aveda.com,
okay.
Or hit me up, scott.debeau@LinkedIn.
Okay.
Cell phone's on there. Happy to help anyone. That's what I'm here to do. And then book is supposed to come out in early next year. It's with the publisher now.
Fantastic.
The name of the book is Safety Management Systems in a Joint Employer Environment. So,
nice.
First book, we'll see. It's my best effort, right? It was.
You know what? That's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of people not doing that want to do it. So
that's true. Well, thanks. Yeah. I started that in 2019. And then, November 2019. How are we on time? Are we on time?
No, I'm just saying, what year is it now? 2020.
Yeah. So you know my writing methods.
That's a good process.
It is.
I learned a lot about yourself.
Well, I did. I learned, actually, I had to put it down.
Okay.
I had to put it down in March of 2020.
Okay.
Because of that thing that happened with
COVID.
That one thing. My job completely changed that month. And so for probably 6 months, I put it down. And then it was, I realized the scope had changed. I was like, this chapter should actually be its own book. Pull that out.
Nice.
So my next book, I have my next title for my next book. It's I'm Sorry I Stuck My Finger in Your Eye, but it was totally necessary.
That's not really the title, is it?
Well, it's the best one I have.
It's the best title. I would buy that book.
Okay.
Not even knowing what was inside. It doesn't
cool.
matter. It doesn't matter.
I'm doing it.
Please
I'm
do
doing
that.
It. You heard it first on this.
I'm sorry
this day.
I stuck my finger in your eye.
But it was necessary.
But it was necessary.
Yes, it was necessary. Right? And not literally, metaphorically. Right.
Hmm. I don't get it.
You don't get the name of the book or the title?
I don't understand why somebody would metaphorically stick their finger in somebody.
Oh, it's like, hey, I need you to look at this. Look, I need you to look. I'm putting this in your eye and it's distracting. You don't want to hear it. You've heard it all before, but it's necessary for you to look at this, like, example one problem, the 5,000 injuries per year.
Okay.
Part of the problem is the business systems, how risk is transferred from one employer to the next.
Got it.
And I've tried to be as respectfully, a respectful critique of the current business models that corporate business decisions are made between corporate entities, and they have contractual beauty around, contract provisions, insurance, but that in no way creates safety downstream for the workforce. And so that's kind of the metaphor is like,
yeah.
Guys, this isn't working. It's been tried and measured. We're not getting the outcomes we need to. It's time to move. So that's the idea of, hope I don't offend anybody with this. I probably will, but it's necessary.
I hope that you do.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Plus,
it gives somebody something to think about.
Yeah. And the people that know me know, look, I'm introverted, typically introverted as personality. You know, very easy to get along with. I'm a great teammate. So for me to come out very pointed on some things has to be, I know where it's driven from. So it's really important. So, and I keep meeting amazing people that are on the journey with me. Like,
yeah. Thank you.
Like you guys.
Thank you.
So,
this has been great.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. So,
thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us on the Safety Pro Roundtable. This podcast is brought to you by SOSPIS, bringing you the best EH software in the industry. If you're ready to learn more about how an EHS software can transform your safety program, your profits, and your entire company, head to www.sospis.com/podcast. That is www.sospes.com/podcast. We'll see you next time on the Safety Pro Roundtable.